From Boca Raton, Florida, this is Behind the Bima. On this episode, the rabbis are joined by Rabbi Yoel Gold, rabbi of Congregation-based Naftali in Los Angeles and renowned motivational speaker. Rabbi Gold discusses the source of his passion and the secrets to telling a great story, plus a surprise question from a fan about to celebrate his bar mitzvah. Also, should rabbis use their titles in their Zoom names? What questions are inappropriate to ask a rabbi when calling about a shidduch? And the rabbis talk with new Boca Raton Synagogue Chief Operating Officer Jeffrey Goldgrab. All this and more Behind the Bima.
Welcome to Behind the Bima, everyone. It's Wednesday night, 9 o'clock. I am Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, joined by my dear friends and colleagues, Rabbi Philip Moskowitz and Rabbi Josh Brody. And we are here to take you
Behind the Bima.
Behind the Bima. That opening video is a great addition, although it's a little slurred between the rabbi's schmooge. Rabbi's schmooge. We got a great show for you tonight. We got an amazing sponsor. We've got incredible guests.
Special guests.
Breaking news, a very special breaking news segment tonight. We got a big simcha that we're going to be celebrating that is upcoming. We're coming to you live, in my case, from my backyard here in Boca Raton, sunny South Florida. Not sunny right now, but we are going through a cold spell. I think it's in the 60s right now, maybe?
Freezing spell.
So we've got a...
is that a real background? Or is that?
We've got a fire pit. That is a legit fire pit taking place behind me. Whenever the weather dips a little bit, my kids beg for a fire pit. And I draw from my old Boy Scout expertise. My kids make fun of me. I make them gather around so I can show them how first you got to get started, right. A little fire starter, how you line up the logs, got to build them up. You got to leave some air to breathe. If there's no breathing for the fire, it can't ignite. And I teach them from the start exactly how to get it done. So I might get sunburned. I might get burnt. So let me know if anything's happening behind me.
Your sweater might catch fire, by the way.
It's possible. Let me know if anything is happening behind me that I need to be aware of tonight.
Right.
Gentlemen, what is new? How are you both doing? How was your week?
Amazing. Amazing week. Well, we got to celebrate at a very, very special wedding. And I think one of the most exciting parts of this wedding for me personally, but I think for all of us, is that when you get called up right now, it's not just Rabbi Goldberg, the Mar D'Asra. It's Rabbi Goldberg, the Mar D'Asra, and the host of Behind the Bima. And then Phil gets
now, hold on. Okay. Two of us got called up as the host of Behind the Bima.
Right.
And one of us had to coach the announcer a little bit to remind was that, Rabbi Brody?
Well, you know what? Sometimes people forget. I have many, many titles, but
it's actually a little embarrassing. It's a little embarrassing because as proud as I am of Behind the Bima and of what we're doing, I'm much prouder of the shiurim and the classes and the Torah. So it's a little bit embarrassing, but also I will admit a little bit cool. They called us up as hosts of Behind the Bima, and it was actually funny because one of the people got a bracha, gets up, and he says into the microphone, and I watch Behind the Bima, and then he said his bracha. So it was very interesting. So we have a fantastic sponsor tonight, Oren Cohen Photography. You know, one of these issues of Corona and of this pandemic, the world being shut down, is how disconnected we are from Israel. I try to go every year. I know you do too. If we have that ability, if we're blessed with that opportunity to spend time in the Holy Land, we have family there. All of us have family there. We're drawn to be there. But it also means our brothers and sisters who live in Israel don't have the normal income and revenue that comes in from tourism, and they've lost out. But we want to keep them strong because we love them, their family, and because we want it to be strong when we're ready to go back. So tonight is sponsored Oren Cohen Photography. He's an Israeli photographer whose expertise and passion to digitally capture amazing moments of families, delegations, missions. People hire him to photograph their trip. Thank you, Rabbi Brody, for holding up. Each of us have a copy of this absolutely incredible book, The Spirit of the IDF. I don't know if you've looked through it, guys, but his pictures jump off the page. They are exquisite. They're clear. They're magnificent. He captures really, really special
moments.
They made
me emotional.
Very, very cool.
I don't know if you guys had that same reaction, but when I was looking at them, they're so real lifelike that it was very, very emotional for me to look at them.
They are. Each picture tells a story, and you really enter that picture. And there's an opportunity here to help Oren Cohen. And every week we're going to feature different people in Israel that we can be helping. If someone is able to go to Israel, you can hire him to take pictures of your event, of your simcha, of your group. But until then, you can also order that very special book, The Spirit of the IDF, at his website, at his email address, rather, oren3126@gmail.com. Or if you go on Instagram, you can find him at oren26c. You need some PR help here, but Oren26C on Instagram. and you will see what we're talking about. His pictures literally jump off the page. They're exquisite. They're extraordinary. Help him out. Go check it out. Go to his Instagram page. Take a look at his pictures. Order them. Download them. They make a beautiful background for your home and take advantage. So we are very honored and excited to be able to have him. We have a great guest tonight, Rabbi Yoel Gold. Who doesn't know Rabbi Yoel Gold has become a household name with his videos that go viral, his articles. He's a passionate speaker. He's a great role model, a great example. He's an amazing machanech who connects to his students, and we're excited to be able to bring him on in a few minutes. But before we do, I want to ask you a question. So last week, I had an enormous privilege to interview Rav Schechter for another organization, another program. I'm going to see if they let me sneak the audio off and put it on Behind the Bima podcast. I don't know if they will, but I had an hour and a half interview with Rav Schechter, which was, we called it Sichas Chulin Shel Talmidei Chachamim. It wasn't Torah, it wasn't Halacha. It was about life, and it was about the many Gedolim he's met throughout his travels and throughout his life. It was really, really special, really amazing. But on the Zoom, and again, it'll be coming out in a couple of weeks. It's not me, it's another organization putting it out. On the Zoom, I couldn't help but notice that mine, just like it says right now, Rabbi Philip Moskowitz, Rabbi Josh Brody, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, his said, and you'll excuse me, Herschel Schechter. And I noticed since then that on rabbinic calls, rabbinic conversations, meetings, very interesting to see who puts their title and who puts their whole name, who puts just their last name. So my question to you is this, your Zoom name or your name for Behind the Bima, what does it say about you, whether you use your title or not? Like, I started to feel bad. Maybe I should just put Ephraim Goldberg. Just right. An ordinary person. I'm just Ephraim Goldberg. Or should you put Rabbi because you reflect something? What do you guys think?
Well, first of all, that's what makes Rav Schechter the incredible, incredible human being that he is his humility. Am I cutting in and out again?
He's gone from Rabbi Josh Brody to Josh.
No, but that's what makes Rav Schechter Rav Schechter, is that he never requires the kavod. He earns it because of, obviously, his godless, his greatness. The truth is, I didn't really think much about it. I figured, like, on a formal program, I go by Rabbi Philip Moskowitz. When I'm on family Zooms, obviously, I take off the rabbi. But that is why he is Rav Schechter, and I am not. But it's his humility, which is definitely one of his distinguishing characteristics.
Yeah, I'll tell you, humility.
My rule of thumb is it's always Josh, except if I think it could help someone else. In other words, let's say for whatever reason, you're a character witness and you got to get called into court. So then you got to be, this guy's the rabbi, he's the head of the federation. You call me whatever you want. If it's going to help you,
head of the federation. Hold on. Are Matt and Marla watching tonight?
whatever you need promotion. Me to be, I'll be whatever you need me to be.
I got you. So okay. I actually just signed in whenever I first did and put my name. And I never changed it. I don't change it when I'm family Zooms, not because I want my siblings or parents to call me rabbi, but I just never thought about it. And the truth is, you know, when I was in YU, I'll never forget, I came to, in my those days, they had an answering machine. Rabbi Moskowitz, you're too young. You have no idea what
no,
that is.
No, my first semester at YU, I had an answering machine, and then I was made fun of, and I switched
yeah, but not with
myself.
But not with the tape or the double tape.
No, the tape, exactly.
I don't even know what that is, guys.
100% the double tape. You used to have to record the outgoing right. message, and one and you was had the whole thing. Tape got caught. She stuck the pencil in it to wind it up. You know. Anyway, so the answering machine. I'll never forget when I came back to my dorm, fifth floor morgue, Yeshiva University. Some of the best years of my life. There was a message on the machine from Herschel Schechter. I was like, "Whoa, as Rebbe, like, wow." So I said, "You know, if or when I become a rabbi, I'm going to call people and I'm just going to say hi. It's Ephraim Goldberg. Hi, it's Ephraim." And I've started doing that, and then I run into this problem: is people don't know who. I say, hi, it's Ephraim. Who? Hi, Ephraim, right. Ephraim Goldberg. Who? It's Rabbi Goldberg. Oh, Rabbi Goldberg, how are you?
Right.
So that becomes a challenge. If people know you by a certain name and you're trying to play cool or be humble or modest, they may not know who you are. So that becomes a little bit complicated.
The best is where when you call a friend, a colleague, let's just say, someone you're not so close with, and you're, you know, hey, right. This is Josh. You know, I'm calling from the Boca Raton Synagogue. They're like, yeah, hi, this is Rabbi so-and-so. I'm like, 1 second. We're not Josh, playing that right. game. I'm Josh. Right. Now you go with your first name.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, we are about to welcome
says
our
a lot about
guest.
Our. It does say a lot about our Gedolim. I know when Rabbi Neuberger calls me, he's never, hi, it's Rabbi Neuberger. He calls himself by his first name. And that's what makes them great, is they're so unassuming. They're so humble. They're so real and normal. And I think that's what appeals to us.
I agree. And as we like to say, they take what they do very seriously. They don't take themselves too seriously. And it's what makes them authentic and real. It's not about them. It's not about covet, about honor. We should try to emulate them. So Josh, well done there on the name. And you're about to see our special guest, also does not have the rabbi, not because he's not a rabbi, an excellent rabbi, a beloved and admired rabbi, but it says a lot about him also, unless he just changed it before he joined because he heard us, which I don't think he did. But we're very honored.
Well, you know, from now on, no guests are ever going to be around ever again.
We are so proud and grateful to be able to welcome the one and the only Rabbi Yoel Gold, who I think is
muted.
To unmute himself. Rabbi Gold, while you unmute yourself, I want to remind everybody a little bit more about you, though you are someone who needs no introduction as a sought-after motivational speaker and renowned throughout the world. Your energy is contagious, that passion for Torah and for meaningful life. You have been a beloved ninth grade Rebbe. Boys are drawn to you. A columnist for Ami Magazine who captures the hearts, minds, and souls of the people who read it. Your videos that go viral and transform the world. Every time you put out a new video, there are two feelings I have. Number one is if one more person sends it to me thinking I didn't get it, whatever. And number two is I can't believe you didn't just share that story with us rabbis. Why'd you have to put it out there for the whole world? You're taking the best stories and you're taking them out of the back pocket of rabbis. But the videos have been seen by close to 10 million people. And I will just say lastly, in introducing and welcoming Rabbi Gold, I know that your favorite video is the same as mine, which is the video that you did of my wife's grandfather, Zaidi Brookstein, Bishol Nassim Brookstein. We had the pleasure of welcoming you to our home and together with my in-laws and filming that video. And you made us celebrities because we go places and people say, I saw that video about your wife's grandfather and it changed me. I let go. I forgave someone. I connected. And for that, we're ever, forever indebted to you. So without any further ado, a special welcome to our dear friend, Rabbi Yoel Gold. Welcome aboard.
Rabbi Goldberg, what an introduction. Can everybody hear me?
We can.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. You know, I'm reminded of the last Shabbos we spent together. It was shortly before Corona broke out in your community, one of the great Shabbosim of my life. I don't think I traveled since that Shabbos, which that, you know, after that last experience, that's the experience I have for 8 months. You know, when I was invited by my dear friends, I know we share a lot of common friends, Shai Stern and Daniel Robin and his family. It was such a privilege to be there with all of you, Reb Josh, Rabbi Philip Moskowitz, and you, Rabbi. It was something. It was the highlight of the year for me. So thank you.
I will say I've never met a person who loves milking a story like Rabbi Yoel Gold. When you own that room, when you know it. When you own that room and you have people on the edge of their seats, admit it. Does it feel good to milk it at that point?
I absolutely love it. I'm so passionate about it. It really does. It's the most rewarding feeling ever, you know, to have a couple of hundred people eating out of your hands, especially I remember in your shul. I mean, it was just the experience of a lifetime.
Well, yeah. you came in the packaged chopped liver, if you recall. It was delicious. The chopped liver. Everywhere you go and share it, the chopped liver is delicious.
You know, the greatest compliment is if somebody can remember something I said so many months later. And I know you have a brilliant mind, Rabbi, so you probably remember everything. But, you know, I still consider it a big compliment. So thank you.
I appreciate it. So let's get started with going behind the beam with Rabbi Yoel Gold. Rabbi Gold, your videos go viral. You have this contagious energy. Your beloved Rebbe, tell us a little bit about your background. What is it in your background? Who are the transformational, inspiring personalities that set you on this path or trajectory? Who are your role models that inspired you to dedicate your life to inspire other people? What in your background gave you that sense of resiliency that you pass on to so many people, either directly or through your writing, through your videos?
Okay, so all right, thanks for that question. It's like you're pitching a softball here. First of all, my passion in general comes from my Hasidish roots. You know, people are surprised when I tell them that I grew up completely, completely Hasidish in Williamsburg. You know, I can get away sort of with Rabbi Yoel Gold and nobody thinks twice, but it's really Yoeli, you know, and, you know, I didn't speak English and, you know, just fasten your seatbelts. I didn't speak English, or I should say a proper English, until I was around 13 years old. And I still remember when I was 13, you know, I learned in Baba V'cheder. And when I was 13 years old, my parents, they got divorced, and both fantastic people. The marriage didn't work out. I'm very, very close to my mother and to my father, to both of them. My mother became sort of modern Orthodox. My father still wears a shtreimel. He's completely, completely Hasidish. He's got the greatest energy in the world, the greatest passion in the world. That's where I take it from him. And one thing I felt throughout my life, even when I was going through hard times, you know, growing up in a divorced home, and something that I always felt was there was always the feeling that I wasn't alone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with me. And, you know, there were always people in my life at the right time at every juncture in my life. I had somebody else showing tremendous amounts of care. I was learning a Babav. I remember the Babav Rebbe, you know, called me in. You know, he showed me Rav Shlomo Halberstam. This is the, you know, the Babav Rebbe put tefillin on me. Sure. And, you know, so my passion in general comes from, you know, it's Yoyli. It's, you could take Yoyli out of Williamsburg, but not Williamsburg out of Yoyli. So, you know, that's where the passion comes from. And the stories that I tell over, I just want to give people that feeling that I felt my whole life, the feeling that, you know, whatever you're going through, there's always a hashgacha. You're always where you're supposed to be, and the Rebbe Shlomo is with you. And I just had a friend just text me today. I was releasing my trailer for the upcoming Hanukkah film, and a guy said, you know, it's so cool to see so many years later that despite what you've been through, you're doing this. And I kept saying to him, it's not despite, it's because, you know, these challenges, these difficulties, or whatever we go through, that's what makes us into who we are. So, you know, I don't know if that answers completely the question, but it gives you a little bit of an insight in my background, where the passion comes from, and my real desire to really tell stories that infuse people with that emunah, that they're never alone.
It does answer it. And I think that's what makes you so compelling, is that you're practicing what you preach, because, you know, there are people who are the product of divorce, or they experience divorce or other challenging or hardship or whatever the case may be. And it brings them down, and they turn inward, or they're turned off to the world. And what you're, don't only say with your words, but I guess with your life story, as you're telling us now, is that we can choose how we react and how we respond. And that says so much. Is it the same qualities, that same passion that made you so successful in the classroom? I know that when you were here, you shared about your methodology of the simanim, of memorizing and of showing children success in their learning. What inspired you to go into Avodas HaKodesh, and what do you think are the ingredients that make a Rebbe successful? If not you, what would you say to other Rebbeim out there? What are the ingredients? What should parents be looking for, demanding of their children's teachers?
I'm going to tell you the truth. This is such an out of the box answer. You know, you're asking this to me right now, and I'm going to give you the honest answer.
On Behind the Bima, we do not share the questions in advance on Behind the Bima. Our guests hear it at the same time as the audience.
It's all spontaneous. You're throwing it out right now. And I think really what makes me successful, Rebbe, is being a good basketball player. It has nothing to do with the classroom. It's really a successful Rebbe starts with outside of the classroom, what your relationship is and how relatable you are to the boys. And I make it my business to play basketball, you know, with my bachrim and whatever it is outside of the classroom, and show them my killer jump shot. And, you know, and some videos of when I was 19 years old in Camp Monk on the team that I was able to dunk, you know, all that goes a really long way. By the way, I'm throwing it out
like
there.
Like how you just threw that in there,
Rabbi
by the
Brody
way.
Also was able to dunk.
Listen. Listen, I'm really good at that. You know, it's like Bein Ashura, it's between the lines.
Right.
So I really, you know,
can't
I
find those
really
videos of me doing that anymore.
You know, by the way, today with Photoshop and with all the entire team that I have behind the scenes editing everything, you know, you never know what's real, but
anything's there is possible. Right.
There, you know, but it really, that's what makes, I think that's what makes somebody successful in today's day and age. The fact that you're relatable, the fact that you share the same interests, then when you come and teach them Gemara, you teach them mitzvahs, you teach them whatever, halacha, they say, you know, here's a guy who I can relate to, I can connect to. Let me hear what he has to say. But if you just come into the classroom just to give information, I think it's a non-starter.
That's amazing. We have a lot more questions for you, but I want to bring on another special guest who's going to pose the next question to you. It's a young man who's outstanding. He is a budding Talmud Chacham. He's got a very bright future. His father is with us tonight. He's wearing a white shirt and a red tie. And it is our dear friend Moshe Moskowitz. Moshe Moskowitz.
You have to unmute yourself.
Moshe's bar mitzvah is this Shabbos. He's been preparing, and he's going to knock it out of the park. And Moshe Moskowitz might be the biggest Rabbi Gold fan there is. And we wanted to bring him on tonight to pose the next question to Rabbi Gold. So Moshe, take it away.
Okay, so my bar mitzvah is this Shabbos, and I'm going to give a short speech after Shabbos. Do you have any advice for me in terms of public speaking and how I could not get nervous before I speak?
Yeah.
That's really for his dad, by the way.
No, first of all, Moshe. Hi, Moshe, and a big mazel tov to you and your bar mitzvah.
Thank you.
So glad. I already feel so connected to you just because you're a fan of mine, and that means everything to me. So
By the way, this is my bar mitzvah present to him. This is it. This is what he's getting for his bar mitzvah. This is what he wanted.
Yeah, but offline we could chat. You know, what's your favorite video of mine and all that? I'd love to hear that. But anyway, what I want to say to you is a good way to start in public speaking when you get up there is you could say, I spoke to Rabbi Yoel Gold, before my bar mitzvah, and I asked him how not to be nervous. And part of what's that going to, what that does for you is it immediately, it makes you real. And it just by saying, I was so nervous standing up here, and Rabbi Goldberg and Josh and Rabbi Moskowitz, they gave me the opportunity to speak with Rabbi Yoel Gold, Wednesday night behind the Bima. And my question was, how should I not be nervous? And Rabbi Gold said, get up there and say, I was so nervous. I spoke to Rabbi Gold. Rabbi Gold is a magician, and he's so good at what he does, and he really calmed me down. That would be something. You don't have to say that, but I'm saying just being real with that, I think automatically, immediately, you'll spark a connection with the audience. They'll relate to you, and it'll be just wonderful. And I you'll hit it out of the park.
I was about to ask the same thing. You still get nervous when you speak?
Not only do I get nervous when I speak, I am nervous right now about what the next question might be and whether I'll be able to answer it or not. Okay. So, being nervous, by the way, being nervous is not a bad thing. It's sort of what it does. It helps you perform and really gives you the fuel that you need to really do a good job. So nervousness, don't be afraid of nervousness, but also if you're really very, 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 very nervous, just put it out there and say, I'm really nervous right now. And I just wanted to put it out there. And that itself will calm you down.
Okay.
Moshe, what's your favorite? Hold on. Moshe, what's your favorite Rabbi Gold video?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Rabbi
Gold. Probably the one I knew about before it came out. The one, the polar bear one. Not the grizzly bear one.
Grizzly.
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you like about that? You like the story?
I like the story. I never knew that fact. It's cool.
Yeah. I'm waiting for somebody to email me that they encountered a grizzly bear and because of my video saved their life. I'm just waiting for that email, for that phone call. We're going to have a sequel when that comes up.
Okay. Yep.
Moshe, big mazel tov. Thank you for joining us tonight. Next time you come aboard.
Luck in your speech. I want to hear how it goes, okay? So please, I'll ask we'll catch up afterwards.
Okay, thank you so much.
Of course. Okay.
Big mazel tov to Moshe. Rabbi Moskowitz, next time he comes on, it should say Rabbi Moshe Moskowitz. But
first of all, I want you to know, before you go on, you just made his bar mitzvah. That's it. Like anything else is icing on the cake. He had yichidus with Rabbi Gold in front of lots of other people, but it's okay. Shkoyach, thank you all very much.
Wow, that was, he's such a pleasure. That's easy. Part of it's amazing that just talking to somebody can make somebody's bar mitzvah. How is that? It's incredible.
It's a beautiful thing. Rabbi Gold, when people say, what's your favorite video or what's someone's favorite video? I know in the world of Rabbanus, your favorite speech better be your next one because you're only as good as your latest speech. And with videos true too, there are videos that maybe went viral 3, 5, 7 years ago. It could have gone viral last month, but you're only as good as your next video. In this case, we're pretty confident about your next video, not only because you're behind it, behind the music, but because my mechutin, Ari Pearl, who is a superstar in appreciating and loving Jewish music. I know Ari's worked with you and helped on this video. Tell us about this next video. The trailer came out. I watched it. If we had the time tonight, we would actually show the trailer on the show. But tell us about the video coming out for Hanukkah, why you're excited and why it's going to be the best video yet.
So I'll tell you, first of all, it's true. It's so important not to get up with previous successes. It's so easy to do that. Hang your head up after you have one successful video. But first of all, your mechutna, a big shout out to Ari. Ari really did help me. It connected me with a lot of the people on the video. And, he's got so many different connections with all these singers and superstars. It was so convenient and so helpful to have him on the team. I got this idea. I was looking through Tehillim and I said to myself, every mizmor, every lamnatzeach, every song, you see David HaMelech immediately after the mizmor, after the song, after the lamnatzeach, he gives a detailed description of some event, some experience or some story that inspired that song. And then I remembered hearing a story about Avram Fried or a story about Shlomo Simcha, a story about Eitan Katz. And I slowly put it together and I said, there must be a song. There must be a song to every story. There is to every song, there must be a story. So over the past 6 months, we have filmed in 4 or 5 different countries, England, you know, A.B. Rothenberg in Canada, Eitan Katz right now, Yonatan Rozel in Israel, MBD, Avram Fried in the East Coast. And Baruch Hashem, it's a 75-minute long film with 8 incredible, incredible stories. I think you will never sing any of those songs the same way once you watch that film, because you know it'll add a new dimension, a new layer, a deeper layer behind Jewish music. It'll really connect you with the soul of Jewish music. It's not just a beat. It's not just a nice tune, but to know the experience, to know the story that sparked that tune, is singing it on a different level. And that's my goal. Ezra Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu green light the film. My goal with this film really is for people to have a deeper understanding and appreciation for real Jewish music. And it's not just sitting down at a piano, figuring out a bunch of chords, but it's sparked by an emotion that preceded that song, that makes the song an expression of something bigger.
We had a series actually started, Rabbi Broder, we're going to hand it off to you second, but we did a series at the shul at BRS where the same thing, there are people who are singing songs all day long. First of all, they're mispronouncing or don't really know the words because they're just used to hearing it, but they don't know where they come from and they don't know the deeper meaning. And, you know, you sing Pischi Li'achosi, that was one of the ones I took on. We all gave the shiurim. What we did is we take 3 songs and we give the whole background. And then, you know, we play the song, give a shiur about the song, then play the song again, and then send people off and say, never listen to the song the same way again. Tell us, Rabbi Gold, where can people find this video? When will it be out? Where will they find it?
Thank you so much for the opportunity to tell people about it. The video will be out in a week, and exactly in a week from today, next Wednesday on hashkifa.com. You can watch a trailer there right now, and you can watch a bunch of other stuff over there that we've put out in the past, including Rabbi Goldberg's video, the video about his in-laws, one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard. And I still remember that day together, Rabbi Goldberg, when we were in your house, and connecting with Dr. Bruckstein, your father-in-law, and your mother-in-law was just a special, special experience. So you can find a lot of that material on the website, but the preview, the trailers will all be uploaded there, and the film will be available on hashkifa.com, hashkifa.com. And it's just a wonderful Hanukkah experience, especially if people are in quarantine or in lockdown or partial lockdown. I know in California here, we can't even go out after 10 o'clock. In every state, it's a different thing. But it'll be something really special to do with your family. It's not free, unfortunately. The production costs are astronomical. We need some help covering the production costs. So we do charge per family $18. It helps us with what we do, as well as some very good friends that have helped us along the way. But hopefully, Be'ezer Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help, that it should inspire Am Yisrael in a special way.
Amen. Rabbi Brody.
Yeah. So I got a question about storytelling rules. You know, we all tell stories, and you're telling stories now to a whole new audience. You know, I remember, without giving it away, but Rabbi Goldberg and I were on a trip many, many years ago where we heard someone tell a story, and then the following year, someone else told that story as though that story happened to them, and now it's going on third generation, and it's you know, it keeps traveling as if they're the main character in the story. You know, you have these great books, Rabbi Krohn, Rabbi Frand, who this new generation of audiences that you know, are looking on videos and listening to you might not have heard many of these stories. Are you allowed, are you taking any of those stories and then saying, you know, these are some stories which maybe you've never heard, there's your stories, they're their stories. What's the rule on storytelling?
Yeah, it's such a great question, and it's an honest question. The answer is, I used to have a yitzhara to take other people's stories and make it my own and pretend they're mine. But the truth is, today I realized that there's no harm in giving anybody credit. To the contrary, to tell people, I heard a story from Rabbi Krohn, and this is Rabbi Krohn's story. I mean, you're just building credibility with the audience, and they honor that. You know, it's not taking anything away from you because you're repeating somebody else's story. And it took me years to learn that, to be very honest. After a video, I've done many, many videos that were featured in Rabbi Krohn's books and in other books, and Chaim Walder books, and People Speak, and so on and so forth. They have given me the contact information of the protagonists in the story, and they facilitated, they helped me produce those videos. As an example, Rabbi Goldberg's story with Dr. Bruckstein, you know, with his father-in-law, Rabbi Krohn helped me with that. He gave me your father-in-law's number, and he helped make make the contact. And I give him credit for it at the end of the video. And, you know, it has his name. It was first published in your book. And it's not a steer. It's not a contradiction because they're two different mediums, first of all. One is book and one is video. And, you know, it's ain't a dime shmealeria. You can't even compare it. You know, Rabbi Kron tells a story. Nobody tells a story like him. But that's in his own inimitable style, in the way he writes it and the way he speaks it. But to show the protagonists on camera and, you know, me narrating and helping structure the story and helping them tell their own story is a very different format, a very different medium. And I learned over the years it's not a contradiction. They're both Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, and there is zero competition in that.
Let me ask a follow-up to that question. Those are the rules of engagement with other people's stories. But in Ami, your column, you're constantly publishing these stories of seeming coincidences, miracles. How do you confirm those stories are true? How do you know? People can email you. They can tell you. People exaggerate. How do you know those stories are true before you either put them in a video or put them in a magazine?
Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah.
We can go to the next
question. Music just stopped.
Take a break right now.
Is believing the person who's calling me up with a story. I mean, I can't, if there are other parties involved, I get to call other people who are involved and everybody's confirming the same story. So then it's even more of a chazaka that it's true. But many times I receive dozens of emails a week with incredible, incredible stories. And people send me stories all the time. And if I hear it secondhand, I don't even publish it. I have to hear it firsthand. Can a person exaggerate? Can a person make up a story? Absolutely, you know, and especially sometimes they're so enamored by their own story, they get, you know, they tell the story, you know, based on their experience and their feelings more than the reality of it. But I mean, that's okay. That's fine with me as long as it's coming from the horse's mouth, so to speak, from the firsthand experience.
Do you ever, you have stories that you don't share because you're suspicious of them?
I mean, some of them.
Hey, he started with the softball question. He built himself.
I know, these are good questions.
Yeah, no, if they're way out there, and I've received such stories, I have not. And the hardest part is to tell a person no, by the way, because they keep following up with an email. When is my story turned into a video or published in the column? And that's you have to be sensitive, you have to be kind, and you know, you just have to be thoughtful with that. And Rabbi, you know, you probably can help me with that, you know, in terms of, you know, being able to navigate, you know, people and, you know, right, not without hurting feelings.
What's your favorite Yoel Gold video?
I would say it's hard to say what's my favorite Yoel Gold video, but first of all, for, you know, you want the politically correct answer right now would be your father-in-law's video.
No, no, correct. Let's skip right ahead. We already plugged the website. You're good.
I would say it had to be my very first video, the very first video that I put out 5-6 years ago about my aunt praying for a soldier. Then she met the soldier in some random restaurant in Herzliya. And he introduced himself, and because he heard that she davened for him, he started putting on tefillin. That was the very first video I put out. I remember within 24 hours, it had over 100,000 views. And what was so unique and remarkable about that video, about that story, was that from the hundreds of emails I received afterwards, feedback, so many of them were Christians, Catholics, and non-Jews asking for the hotline to pray for an Israeli soldier, because that was part of the story. Wow. And, you know, they posted it on theblaze.com and another non-Jewish websites. And I was actually interviewed by some non-Jewish magazines on that story. And it was just a remarkable Kiddush Hashem. It was remarkable to see and to hear how non-Jews wanted to pray for Israeli soldiers in Israel. And it was just a unique video. Just one part about that video, the very first time I did it, nobody wanted to get on camera. They said, "What are you doing? We're not getting on camera. Who are you? I was just going to, you know, send a story to Rabbi Kron. Why do I need to give it to you and get on camera?" I said, "No, we're doing something very different." Right. And it took me a while to convince my aunt and Barak. And Barak said, "Don't put the video on YouTube. Al tasim et zeh b'YouTube." He was very nervous about it going on YouTube. I said, "I'm not putting it on YouTube. I'm just going to give it to H and a couple of, you know, social media platforms and websites." And he said, "Okay." He at the time worked as a waiter in Herzliya in this meat and wine restaurant over there. As soon as it was released, it wasn't even on YouTube, the restaurant picked up the video, they put it on their website, and they got more business because of that video, and he ended up getting a raise for it, and then he allowed them to put it on YouTube.
Wow. That's funny.
I hope he made a donation back to Hashkifa.
That must be my favorite video as my first. That's probably my favorite.
That's funny. Wow. Rabbi Gold, I want to take this in a little bit of a different direction and revert back to something you mentioned earlier, which is that you are a ninth grade Rebbe, I believe. Is that true, right? So I remember when you...
Sifta Birkas Yitzchak. Although I used to be there a full-time Rebbe, I'm not a full-time Rebbe anymore. You know, I just have to come clean. Over the past year or so, I had to slowly move away from that because I had so many other projects that I was involved in, and I had to sort of pick and choose what I would focus on.
Okay, good. No, because that's what I was curious about. You know, I remember when you came to Boca last, I guess it was last year, 2 years ago, your bio just said ninth grade Rebbe. And that was a little bit unusual because here you are, this amazing, charismatic, dynamic speaker. You're putting out videos that have hundreds of thousands of views. And your bio just said ninth grade Rebbe. That was how you wanted yourself to be described. Walk us through why that's such a big part of you and why you struggle now with obviously hanging on to that part of you as you grow the video side of things. Why is the Rebbe, the ninth grade Rebbe specifically? So many people want to be a senior Rebbe, you know, teach them as they're going off to yeshiva. You chose ninth grade. What was the thinking behind that? Why was that so important to you?
I mean, first of all, that's a great question. First of all, being a Rebbe, I believe is the hardest and most rewarding job there is. It's the hardest job, the most underpaid job, and the most rewarding job. And, you know, to be able to inspire and influence people, kids in a classroom, really have an impact on the trajectory of their lives is a big medal. And it's a medal of honor. And, you know, so I take pride in the fact that I was a full-time ninth grade Rebbe at one point. And that's everything. But unfortunately, because of, you know, the different projects, fortunately, I should say also, because of the different project, the videos, the films, and, you know, the traveling, a lot of traveling. I remember when I came to Boca, every time I traveled, I had to get away from the classroom here and there, Friday and Sunday. And I slowly had to cut back so much that I couldn't really keep up. And so it became once a week, and you know, now I just have my foot in the door. But the emes is, if you're 99% in, you're 100% out. And I didn't feel it was fair to my talmidim to have a Rebbe that's traveling and involved in different projects and is not 100% dedicated to them. So I had to pull away. And they got a Rebbe that's Rosh Shai Veruba Shekua, and that's what they deserve. They deserve that. You know, I keep going back and forth. They come to my house, Shabbos, and this and that. You know, that's fine. But to call myself the 100% full time Rebbe, I couldn't resolve that with my conscience to be 99% in and not give it my full heart. But the heart that you're going to see is the film and whatever I'm able to do that has such a broad reach, Baruch Hashem, around the world. That's amazing.
It's a great message. It's a great message for anyone who, whatever they're doing, that if you're 99% in, you're 100% out, that you got to give it our all. There's the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Malamdim in Yoreh Deah writes that if a Rebbe doesn't get a good night's sleep, he's stealing from the Talmidim. You got to come into that classroom with your all, and you know, you got to leave your baggage at home. And if you stay up all night doing something irresponsible, wasting your time, and you're low energy the next day, then you know, like you said, if you're only 99% there, you're 100% out. What a great message for everyone, whatever they're doing.
I found myself
winging my shiurim. You know, like at the time, like once I found myself winging the shiurim, and I could do it easily. But, you know, it was lacking. And I went to the Rosh Yeshiva. I went to Rav Sholem Tendler, who I have such a great respect for. And I said to him, I can't commit myself 100%. And it's just not fair to you. It's not fair to the yeshiva. And it was a hard decision to make. But then it became once a week. And, you know, this way, you know, everybody's happy.
Go ahead, Rabbi.
No, I was going to say, I commend it because in our generation, which is so multitasking, and you're usually, the more you're doing, the bigger of a person you are, right? And we want to be super busy. We want to always be busy. We want to be multitasking. I spoke to a friend in New York the other day. I said, oh, what are you up to? And he gave me like 19 jobs, right? He's this in the morning, that in the afternoon, night seder Rebbe here, on the weekends he's here. And I was dizzy listening to him. And exactly what you're saying, I don't know how you keep yourself whole when you're divided in so many parts. And so I give you a lot of credit for having the self-awareness and to be able to say, you know what, this is where my koach is right now. This is where I want to put my energy. And I don't have to stretch myself too thin. I think it's, as Rabbi Goldberg said, I think it's a really important message for so many people.
Although it should, we should point out, and it's important to point out that a lot of machanchim don't have that luxury, right? Because unfortunately, it's not the most lucrative of fields. A lot of them need to multitask and take on several jobs, and it's not because they want to rob from their talmidim, but some just don't have any other choice. And if they could afford to only have that one job, they'd give it their all. And 100%. Obviously, we all know that, but it's important for us to
100%. Point that out.
Rabbi Goldberg, it's very true. I just want to follow up quickly. It's very true, Rabbi Goldberg, what you're saying is because in the beginning, 5 years ago, when I was still a Rebbe, I was doing some videos on the side. I didn't have the luxury to be able to pull away 100%. And as soon as that opportunity opened itself and I was able to sort of provide for my family without that, I had to make that choice. And that's when, so it's true. A lot of people, they have to spread themselves thin, not because they want to, but because they have to.
Right. Want to thank Rabbi Goldberg for your time, even though it is 3 hours earlier in LA, so it's not late yet for you. But we're still grateful for your time. Your time is
valuable. That's it. I got another 3 hours. I thought we'll go for longer.
Fantastic. In that case, we have 25 more questions. So let me ask you this. We are professional storytellers too. As rabbis, you know the old line. I think it's Rabbi Reisman who has this line. He says that if you have told a great joke in a drusha, you know, you can't use it again for 3 years. If you told a great story in a drusha, you can't use it again for 5 years. If you told a great Dvar Torah in a drusha, you could use it again in the same drusha. it's a great line. It's a great line. So we are storytellers too. And the stories, you know, and Chazal understood that. Two-thirds of Shas is Agarata, not Halacha, because the story is what illustrates it, which drives home. It's what gives the message. It's really what's created the Jewish value system. So tell us the secrets and ingredients of telling a good story. You know, we get up and we tell stories. We're all storytellers around our Shabbos table, to our children, to our grandchildren, to our friends. What are the ingredients of telling a story well?
It's a great question. People ask me that all the time. I'll tell you, I mean, first of all, you, like you're saying, I mean, I've heard you speak, Rabbi Goldberg. I've heard you speak, Rabbi Moskowitz. I've heard you, you know, you guys are incredible speakers, incredible storytellers. You probably can answer that question just as well as I can. And you'll agree I'm about to say. I once heard a great line: before you write a book, you have to become the book. And I feel like before you tell a good story, you have to live the story. And like, you know, that's why personal stories are the greatest stories to tell, because you're not sharing information, you're sharing yourself, you're sharing a piece of you. And I think that the first criteria to telling a good story is that it has to touch you in such a deep way, at least if it's not your story and you hear it, it has to touch you so deeply that when you share it, it comes across as if you're sharing a piece of yourself. And that is what Chazal say, Dvar Mayotzim Analev Nechnasim Alalev, that if you can own the story before you tell it, instead of just parroting information, own it, feel it, then when you deliver it, it'll be on a different level.
That's true. It's beautiful.
It's great.
It's beautiful. Listen, the stories that you don't print, the stories that you don't take, would you mind emailing them to me? I can use them. I'll take the Shirayim. I'll gladly have your leftovers that didn't qualify.
That is,
to make it into
that
a video.
Is great. Yeah.
Just forward them right to me. I'll take them.
Just give us a week in advance, you know, just before you go public with the stories.
Yeah.
Rabbi Goldberg, before we let you go, I believe I saw that at one point you were involved in Aish as well. Is that true?
So, yeah, we lived in Israel for 5 years. Baruch Hashem, we had three of our sons who were born in Shaar HaTzedek in Eretz Yisrael before we moved to Manchester, England. And I had the incredible opportunity, my first gig. You know, Avram Fried says gig stands for God is good. My first gig was heading a Beis Medrash program and doing some outreach for HUK, headed by the one and only Rav Naftali Schiff, Rabbi Daniel Rohr, Rabbi Shlomo Farchi was working back then for HUK. And, you know, it was just a great experience. First 2 years out of Kolo to teach and inspire people until my wife said she's lacking some vitamin D. It's been enough in Manchester. I think we got to go back to LA for some sun and some family. I think, who was it? Mark Twain. By the way, Manchester is one of the great communities. I love the people of Manchester, but I think Mark Twain said that he wants
nice
to
save,
die there.
Nice save, by the way. We're about to get hate mail from all of England.
No, I love, I have lifelong friends from my stint in Manchester, but I always love to say Mark Twain said, there's not an exact quote, but he said it. I think, Rabbi Goldberg, maybe you can give me the exact quote. He said he wants to die there. This way he won't know the difference. It's so cloudy, there's no sun. Anyway, so 2 years later my wife and I, we moved back here to LA. We've been here, you know, 7 years, and it's just been just the greatest time, because we have family and she has her parents and, you know, siblings, and, you know, you can never underestimate the importance and value of having family around. So that's one of the things we were missing.
There's so many more questions we want to ask. You've taken up so much of your time, but I want to announce this just in. One of your big supporters in BRS has texted me, any BRS member family who would like to watch the video next week for Hanukkah, we will anonymously sponsor each family to log in. They have to be a BRS member, but any BRS member who needs help being able to log in, they will anonymously sponsor any family who needs help. That's really a very, very beautiful thing.
Wow.
We're deeply grateful to them. And they're big fans of yours as well. So
thank you. Privately his name so I can thank him personally, but yes,
I definitely will. My wife won't let you go without asking one more question. It's a very rabbinic move, by the way. You keep saying this is the last question and then you can just keep asking them. You are the rabbi of a shul of Holocaust survivors, and you know that is enormous privilege to have access and exposure. These are the greatest heroes. They're the people who live with Emuna, who come to shul after what they lost. There's no greater story of resiliency than that. Tell us a little bit about that, about them, about what you've learned by being thereof. What's it like to be the spiritual guide for people who've experienced something and displayed a spiritual heroism, which is probably unparalleled?
Yeah. Wow. Rabbi Goldberg, you know, as you're asking me the question, you're describing me as the spiritual guide and leader of these people. I think to myself, I don't see it that way at all. I actually see myself as the receiver, not the giver so much, and the Talmud, not the Rebbe. My approach with the Holocaust survivors is one of, I have such incredible awe and respect and admiration for each and every one of them that I bring my kids to them for brachas constantly, and I sit with them hours listening to their stories. I mean, they are, like you're saying, the truest heroes we have today. And, you know, I would do a video on each and every one of them. You know, that's how I feel. And I remember when I did one video with one of my congregants, Amram Deutsch, when I came late to shul, and he reprimanded me for it. And he told me how he put on tefillin underneath the barrack in Auschwitz for 6 months. You know, I didn't think it'll have such an impact, but that's a glimpse of the people in the shul and just the incredible people, the incredible heroes they are. So I don't consider myself a spiritual guide or a leader. I consider myself a Talmud, and it's a privilege to be around these people. And I'm so happy that my kids can grow up with such incredible human beings around them and nash from them on Shabbosim.
Rabbi Yoel Gold, thank you for joining us tonight. You are a magnificent storyteller, and your life is a magnificent story. And Hashem should bless you with the energy and strength to continue to inspire so many people. Hashkifa.com. If you're a BRS member, again, don't take advantage unless you need it, but we have a generous sponsor willing to help anyone who needs a little help for Hanukkah. But really, everybody should take advantage and support the beautiful work and the inspiration. If you're feeling down and out, watch one of these videos and they will lift you up. They will really inspire you. Rabbi Gold, thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight, and wishing you a beautiful Shabbos and a happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Rabbi Moskowitz. Josh, thank you.
Good to see you.
Take care. Amazing.
Wow. Amazing.
He's great. A ball of energy.
Why don't we do like a drive-in theater and just broadcast the movie? Everyone can watch.
It's not a bad idea,
cars.
By the way. We could do it one night. No, or everybody can outside on the.
Maybe we could even rent that. Well, we can rent a theater.
Well, we have some tricks up our sleeve for Hanukkah. I don't know if we're ready to announce them yet, but BRS has some big events coming up that are going to shock and surprise and excite many of our members.
The Shinantam. Season 21 this Saturday night, Motzei Shabbos.
The Shinantam season 21.
Uncle Moshi.
And listen, the fact that we've got the outdoor pleasant weather, although my fire pit has gone out.
Yeah, you almost got lit on fire in the middle of the interview, by the way.
At one point, it looked like it exploded.
I texted my kids, could someone throw a log on the fire? And I didn't mean literally throw it, but they didn't want to be in the picture. So they threw the log. And well, it's snowing ashes.
Me,
but whatever. It's all good. If you're listening to the podcast, not watching, you have no idea what we're talking about.
Now, I think we have some breaking news, though, don't we?
We do have some breaking news. Behind the Beam of breaking news. This Justin.
How happy is he right now?
This Justin. First of all, what a night. Moshe Moskowitz on the eve of his bar mitzvah. Rabbi Yoel Gold, the great celebrity. And Boca Raton Synagogue is ready to make a big, big announcement tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, the world over, somebody very special has chosen to bring his talents to South Florida and to join the team at the Boca Raton Synagogue as the chief operating officer. Without any further ado, it is a great honor and pleasure to welcome the latest member of the BRS team, BRS movement, the BRS brand, the one and only Jeffrey Goldgrab. Jeffrey, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Been really looking forward to this since the beginning of Behind the Bima. I've been waiting to be on. So
I was going
to
say, what's this?
It's
job or being on Behind the Bima?
No, Behind the Bima. Definitely Behind the Bima.
Throughout the search process and the negotiation, we said to Jeffrey, when you're ready, and when you're ready to announce the big move, we know exactly where to do it. So Jeffrey and his beautiful family have arrived in Boca. They're here on the ground and getting ready to start in a short time from now. First of all, I'll point out, you always want your fundraiser to be named Gold Grab. It really works out well. It's a great message.
Very subtle.
We were looking for Mr. Cash Grab, but we couldn't find him.
We got a Goldberg and a Gold Grab, and hopefully we're well on our way. Jeffrey, what makes you excited to join the BRS team? And don't say anything about us, just to talk about the community or this transition. Where are you coming from? What were you doing? And why are you making this lane change in your life?
Okay, wow. So so we're coming from Staten Island. I've been there my entire life, most of my entire life. My wife is from Jacksonville, Florida. She went to Weinbaum, so she knows the community quite well. You said not to speak about you, but you know, I have been following you and Rabbi Moskowitz for a bunch of years. Always loved your content that you put out. Before this, I was working at a large health plan in Staten Island, and before that, I was working at Camp Hask and Hask Center for about 9 years in total. So there I gained a lot of nonprofit administration experience. And ever since then, you know, I've just always known that like that's where my heart is. That's where my passion is. I've always wanted to make a difference for my graduate school for the entrance essay. That's what it's called. I wrote about how like my dream is to one day, you know, run a large nonprofit. And there's nothing bigger in the Jewish world, you know, in the Jewish shul world than BRS. So I'm really excited to join the team, bring my family down here. Everyone here that we've met so far has been unbelievably warm and open and welcoming. We've been here for one day. It feels like we've been here for, I can't even tell you how long. It's unbelievable. Everyone that we speak to loves the community. And, you know, it's really a testament to the three of you who I'm now privileged to join as part of the team.
Like to make dreams come true here at BRS, and we're so excited and grateful that you're down here and your beautiful family. You got some big shoes to fill. Our dear beloved friend Matthew, who took his talents elsewhere but continues to be an enormous source of help and support and partnership for our shul and for us personally. It's a very beautiful thing, the sense of synergy and cooperation all the local shuls have, and we're really one big family, and I know that he will welcome you and you'll work together and you'll fill those shoes in your own way. And we're really, really excited to have you here, Rabbi Brody, Rabbi Moskowitz. Any questions, comments you have for Jeffrey?
Can't wait. After you raise that first $1 million, we'll have you back on the show.
Amazing.
After you grab that first pot of gold.
I am very, very excited that you're here for a multitude of reasons, many of which I've shared with you. But it's so great to have you here. And you know, I look forward to getting to know your family and to welcome you to the team. And one thing you'll learn very quickly is it's not just a job, it's not a career, but it, you know, when you work with us, it's really part of being a family. And it's a very special work environment. I'm feeling it this weekend, making a simcha. And it's when you really feel that you're very blessed to be surrounded by a lot of people that love you and care about you. And I can't wait to welcome you in to that inner sanctum, to that, you know, senior staff culture where we treat each other like brothers and best friends and not just colleagues. And so I can't wait to have you in that.
You can't wait. This guy, former executive director.
Yeah, no, I'm done. I'm done. Over.
I appreciate it all. Thank you for giving us the time that we needed to, make the move. And I know you were filling in, and we definitely appreciate it. You know, we definitely felt it. And
that's why they call
him Phil. Look forward to stepping in.
Earlier today, Rabbi Moskowitz actually created a link on the website and basically sent it this text. Look what I could do. So proud and so excited. So he's learned.
And then I said, Baruch Shep Tarani Me'on Shoshal Zeh. I said, I'm done with this. It's Jeffrey.
More than once this week.
you talk about trial by fire. We welcome our new chief operating officer. The weekend, one of the rabbis is making one of the biggest bar mitzvahs the community's ever seen in the middle of a pandemic. So is it snowing in your backyard?
You're about to light on fire.
Just right, brother, with me. brought the cold.
Wow, it's really wild. It's really wild. Jeffrey, we're so happy to have you here, and we can't wait to work with you, and we can't wait to bring you back on. I'll tell you, just echoing what Rabbi Mosco said in terms of the spirit of cooperation, I've received several texts from people who say, aside from the guests that come on behind the Bima, I'm not tooting our own horn, I'm just sharing what other people say, because to us this is obvious, but apparently to other people it's refreshing or surprising. They say to see three rabbis get along who are really good friends and who have fun is to them very refreshing. So that's the atmosphere. We work hard, we play hard, we have a great time, and we're so excited to add you to it. So welcome to Boca, and if you need anything, call Rabbi Moskowitz.
Thank you, Aaron. Shabbos. I really look forward. Thank you.
All right. Welcome.
That's great.
Somebody who's any more special guests tonight? What a night. Really amazing.
This is really amazing.
All right. It is time for Shame on You segment of the night. And tonight, the Shame on You.
We love that music.
my fire's out, so we can switch to the other view.
It's great.
You like that music, huh?
It's just like, what is that?
So, exactly. You know, shame on you. Unfortunately, this is a repeat offender, and shame on you. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib removed a tweet, but it's too late because, you know, once you leave your digital footprint, fingerprint, you can try to delete it. It's there. She tweeted the phrase, the expression that we know has such a terrible connotations, which is "from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." And that expression,
it's horrible.
That song, that chant, "from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," is part of the Hamas charter. And in that charter, it has one meaning and one meaning only, which is to wipe
genocide.
Out the state of Israel. Genocide. Wipe the state of Israel and all the Jews who live in it into the sea. "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free."
Well, why don't you explain what, Rabbi, explain what the river and the sea are so people can, right? It's
Yeah, the Jordan River and the sea. Yeah,
the Mediterranean Sea. That's it.
That's it. So shame on you, Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman. You know, you could delete it, but we saw it, and it's unfortunately a terrible reflection still of who you are and what you believe. Essentially, a sitting, recently reelected Congresswoman has called, like you said, for a genocide, for act of violence, for destroying the entire state of Israel. It's not a peaceful solution. It's not a two-state solution. It is for a destruction of the state of Israel. It's not okay. It's not acceptable. This has nothing to do with party or politics. Whatever party, in one's own party, they should be even more outraged. But she is our Shame on You segment of tonight. Unfortunately, as I said, a repeat offender. We've got just a couple minutes left. What else is on your agenda, gentlemen?
I got nothing going on. So, you know, I could sit around eating bonbons all night. But, Baruch Hashem, it was nice to have Moshe on tonight.
Moshe's a sweetheart. He's such a good boy. What are you most proud of about Moshe for this bar mitzvah and in general? Tell the world.
He's just a good person. He's a good all-around, well-rounded person. I'll tell you, he's really pushed himself very hard. He's taking it very seriously. Minyan, tefillin. Thank God. He's a good kid. He tries hard. He takes his Judaism really seriously. He's making a number of siyumim this weekend. And he's making us really proud. I daven every day that it should continue. That the teenage years don't get in the way, and that and that they should continue to give us nachas for many years.
Amen. As I told him in the required bar mitzvah meeting, thank God he has a good mother. Baruch Hashem.
Amen to that.
Helped him become the outstanding young man that he is. Very exciting. I posted a question. I don't think we'll have time to really unpack this now. Maybe we'll continue with it next week. I posted a question on social media today. That drew a response much bigger and different than I expected at all. You know, as a rabbi, there's a lot of hats that you wear, a lot of roles that you fill. And one of them is that you're often a reference in questions of shidduchim. People put you down as a reference, they call. And I love it. The opportunity to help people find their happiness, their basheret, it's the greatest joy. And to be able to talk to people and talk about the people who grew up in our community, the people that we know, I love it. However, that said, I think there's a published question list somewhere that everybody's got their hands on and they're using, not all over different segments of the community, but I hear the same questions over and over again. So I shared that one of the questions I've been hearing recently, so people will ask me, you know, where'd they go to yeshiva and do they learn and whatever about the family. And then they'll say, are you aware of any medications that the boy or the girl are on and why? And I always pause and I think to myself, first of all, as the rabbi, I'm not the doctor, I'm not the physician, I'm not a family member. Why would I be aware of medications? And if I were aware confidentially of medications that they were on, why would or should I share it? I would never do such a thing. So most recently I got this question, and I turned the person who asked, I said on the phone to them, I said, you know, if I knew that your daughter were on any medicines, would you want me to reveal that about her?
What'd they say?
There was dead silence. And then they just continue with the next question on the list.
Yeah.
So I wrote this post today and I said, if you asked a question about the medicines, it'll likely end the call. And then I challenged everybody, let's come up with a list of what are responsible, respectful. I have two married children right now. So I have credibility. I'm in the parsha. I'm in the game. I know what it means to really want to vet the person they're going to marry. And you know, there's nothing more precious than our own children and be concerned for them. Rabbi Brody, you've got a married one. So I understand that. But on the other hand, there's got to be a set of responsible, reasonable, respectful questions that we can ask. So I pose that, and overwhelmingly people got the point and were supportive of it. And in fact, they're helping me write an article next week, which will have a list of what are the questions. And in fact, I'm going to actually work on, you know, I don't want to say this definitively, but I have this idea to put together a list of questions and to try to get rabbis to sign on this list and say, these are the questions that we'll answer. Essentially trying to communicate a message of these are what we think are the appropriate questions to ask. So here, it's a rabbinically sanctioned list. Call us with any of these questions, right, and we're willing to answer it. So, but I was shocked that more people than I thought, some very close to me, said, well, what do you mean? That's a perfectly reasonable question. Are they on any medications? We all know horror stories. Hopefully we don't, but we know horror stories where someone married someone only to find out later there was a psychiatric or psychological or medical condition that was not disclosed. And maybe if somebody had warned or disclosed it earlier, a lot of pain could have been avoided. So my answer to that is conflating two issues, and I've got to find the time to write this back online too to clarify my position. It's conflating two things. If somebody has a diagnosed or undiagnosed, but a significant issue, they have to responsibly disclose that.
Correct.
Is it before the first date, on the first date? Right. That's got to be somewhere in the dating process, in the courtship, say, look, I want you to know that I take medicines for these reasons, or I've had this issue, or I struggle in this way. And if they don't, it's egregious, it's wrong, it's indefensible, and we need to coach people that that's the right thing to do. And
I think
it's true that in halacha, hold on one second, one more second, and then I definitely want to hear what you both have to say. But in halacha, and of course I had several people send me Mar Makomos, in halacha, whether it's the Chafetz Chaim or others, talk about when halachically you're allowed to disclose, it's the toelis, it's for good. I got all of that. However, that's a responsibility in the dating process to kind of just broadly say that someone should be able to ask. I mean, who would ever trust me again if I knew confidential information? And again, the question of what medicine are they on? So actually, I have a good friend who lives in New York who texts me today. He says, by the way, if anyone wants to know, I take antacid for reflux, and I have a bad case of gout. that was what he said. But you know, that idea, I joke that one of the members of our community, very beloved, super trustworthy, I love him, he works at a local pharmacy. So I say, people think that the rabbis know the most about the congregants of Boker Tov Synagogue. There's no doubt in my mind that that individual, an avid listener behind the Bima, he knows the most about the Boker Tov Synagogue members more than anyone else. The one who works
have him
at
on
the
next week.
I had a terrible experience with him once. I went up to get a medicine. So he's like, what's the birthday? So I said, my kid's birthday. He goes, nope. I was like, I tried again. He goes, try again, Rabbi. I got on the third try.
Not bad. So anyway, it's a conversation worth having. We're out of time for tonight. Maybe we'll talk about it in another time. But what are the reasonable questions, and how the shidduch process? What's broken about it? How can we fix it? And are these reference checks helping? It doesn't seem so. The statistics and the direction of the challenge that we have don't seem to reflect that. The greater the inquiry and the greater the inquisition, the better off we're doing in vetting these things out. So I think they're actually counterproductive. And the last thing I'll add is that often these questions do not include a question about, are they kind? Do they hold the door? Do they say thank you? Are they courteous? Are they a mensch? And so on and so forth. So, you know, I think it's up to us. We got to put together a good set of questions. So to not conflate the issues, if there's an underlying issue, you got to disclose, whether it's before you start dating on the first date or at some point when the relationship gets serious, you have to disclose, and your sources of inspiration, your teachers, your parents, your rabbis should encourage a person to disclose that. That's for them. But on the other hand, we, the references, have to be very careful to maintain confidentiality and in order to do our part in a way that we will continue to be trusted and continue to be respected. Any final words, gentlemen?
No, I agree 100% with that. And, you know, I'm not in the parsha yet, but I do get the calls. And, you know, there's a little bit of you that like cringes every time you get the call. As you say, you know it's important. You know you're doing something good. You know you're working to bring people together. But I'll be honest, like there's a part of me that it feels a little bit unnatural.
Yeah, I remember when Ayala was dating Jake And, you know, so we knew of the other family. We have some friends in the community. They're friends with them. So it's like, you know, okay, well, what does he do? Well, he's very successful. You know, he's in finance. I'm like, great. They're going to come down here. They're going to see that I'm like a youth director. Yeah, I'm getting dressed up as Cookie Monster.
You're the co-host of Behind the Beamer. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, that's what pushed it over the edge, you know.
They by the way, any surprises? Rabbi Brody, close us out by talking about Vishinantam. When is opening
big.
Week of Vishinantam?
Oh, this is so exciting. I want you to know I was very nervous that we were going to not have it this year, 20 years in a row, and then we said, well, maybe it's not going to happen. And then there was a chance we were going to do it virtually, and it wasn't going to be the same. But I think we were able to pull something together, assuming the weather is going to be great because it's Rabbi Moskowitz's weekend. It's his Shabbos, so Motzei Shabbos is going to be beautiful. We're going to be outdoors, socially distanced. Every single family is going to be sitting on their own blanket, families studying, learning, coloring, whatever they're doing together, age appropriate. And of course, very special guest star, Uncle Moshe is going to be doing a very, very exclusive concert. And it's free. It's not $18. It's free. Oh, and then pizza. We got pizza. We're giving out a box of pizza bagels to every family that comes. Make it at home.
Amazing. That's awesome. Really amazing. I want to thank our sponsor again tonight. Oren has an amazing book, The Spirit of the IDF. He's really an extraordinary photographer. I, you know, I sound like I'm pushing it because there's a sponsorship, but
no, it's a special book.
You've gone through this book. It's a special book. Oren Cohn, really extraordinary, talented photographer.
Great Hanukkah present.
Order the book. Yeah, it's a great Hanukkah present. The Spirit of the IDF, Oren3126@gmail.com, Oren3126@gmail.com. If you want to experience some of these amazing pictures for yourself before you order it, go on Instagram, Oren26C, Oren26C. Sounds like a seat on the LL flight. Oren26C on Instagram. Get a taste of flavor of these incredible, incredible books. Wish Oren Cohn a lot of luck and take advantage next time you're in Israel of having him photograph your Simcha. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been another edition of Behind the Bima. It's been a pleasure to be with you tonight. We've welcomed a bunch of special guests.
What
another
a night.
Great episode. We had a lot of fun. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for our sponsors. We'll see you again next week. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and stay holy.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Bima. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week for another peek behind the Bima.